from LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
I'm Rick Howlett, and this is In Conversation. Today, we're going to talk about health outcomes related to pregnancies and childbirth here in Kentucky, across our region, and in the U.S., which has the developed world's highest rate of death from pregnancy or childbirth complications. What are the contributing factors to health complications during pregnancy or childbirth? Why are the mortality figures higher among people of color? What help is available to those at risk? We'll pose those and other questions to our panel, which includes an OBGYN, a doula who provides support before, during, and after childbirth, and a journalist editor who's been covering this issue. We want to hear from you, too. Call us with your questions about pregnancy and childbirth today on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to have a discussion on a critical health issue in our country and our communities, deaths of expectant people during pregnancy and or during childbirth. The mortality rate is a lot higher in the U.S. than you might think. According to most data, it's the highest among wealthier nations. So today we'll explore why these outcomes are so high, how big of a problem it is in our region, and how it breaks down among various groups. Like nearly all health problems, there's a racial disparity, and we will discuss that and what solutions are being pursued. We have three guests with us today. Dr. Edward Miller is an OBGYN with University of Louisville Health, U of L Health for short, and specialties include maternal fetal medicine, multiples, twins, triplets, gestational diabetes, LGBTQ care, increasing access and equity in prenatal care, and high-risk pregnancies. Dr. Miller, thanks for taking the time to be with us today. Are you there, Dr. Miller?
I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you with us today. Please welcome Mika Pohl, who's a doula, midwife student, executive director, and founder of Black Birth Justice, and I'll read a little of the description that she gave us. Our mission at Black Birth Justice is advocating for maternal health rights and providing superior support for postpartum persons. Our vision is to combat the maternal and infant mortality rate. Our focus is women of Louisville's most vulnerable communities. The care they receive will directly combat maternal and infant morbidity and mortality. Mika, it's good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here.
And please welcome Nina Martin, who is a features editor for Reveal. It's the radio show and podcast that's part of the Center for Investigative Reporting. She previously reported on this and other issues for ProPublica. Nina, good to have you with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have everybody on board today. You may also hear us use the term maternal health as a medical or care term. Of course, non-binary people and transgender men can be pregnant and give birth, and we do want to acknowledge that the issue does affect people regardless of gender. Well, Dr. Miller, let's get an overview about this high rate of mortality and complications that we're seeing in this country. I think that might be a surprise to a lot of people. What are, in your experience, what are the most common complications and their treatments?
So, you know, when we talk about these complications that we see, and it's particularly the disparities that we see in the rates of morbidity and mortality in people of color, this is a longstanding problem. When we look at the reasons for maternal mortality, the most common complications are hypertensive disorders of pregnancy. They are bleeding that happens during pregnancy. In the United States of America and in other developed countries, bleeding is becoming less of a problem. It's mostly hypertensive disorders of pregnancy and other conditions that really are all about access to care, not only during pregnancy, but in the postpartum period. And I really think that the postpartum period, the period where, you know, oftentimes we think of pregnancy as this 9-month issue, and then a woman has a baby and then she's shuffled off at home and the healthcare system says, great, we did our job, the baby's healthy. But that's the most important time, from access to care, to resources that moms have available to them. And that's really the time where I think that we are missing opportunities to support and to give further aid to all women, but particularly women of color.
I want to come back and talk much more about that, but I want to go around the table and get an initial comment from everyone. Mika, tell us, describe what a doula does and how a doula is different from a midwife. They're not the same, right?
No, there are very distinct differences between midwives and doulas. So for starters, midwives are medical professionals, whereas doulas are not. So midwives will be like your physician, somewhat like an OBGYN, or, you know, any type of medical professional. They can diagnose, they can, you know, check your symptoms. They can, they're very hands-on, and they handle your care throughout your pregnancy and postpartum. Whereas a doula is actually a support person. So a doula is typically a trained or certified person, but sometimes it can just be a friend or a family member that did some, you know, some reading and research on how to support the birthing individual. So a doula focuses on helping mom throughout her prenatal period, helping her make sure she's ready for her delivery, making sure that she has an adequate diet that's full of, you know, the proper nutrition, making sure that she's ready for birth so that she is not suffering. Being that emotional support person and that friend is what a doula is.
So what type of training do you go through to be a doula? And how do you interact with what I'll call the traditional medical system with the, you know, doctors and hospitals and that sort of thing?
So typically the training is about 30 days. You do some in-person training. Sometimes it's virtual. You do have to do a paper to be certified. So it's about a 5-page paper. With that, you have to read a few books that come along with it. I'll be honest with you, it's very pricey. To be certified as a doula, it can be anywhere upwards of $800 to $1,200. And then as far as the relationship with doctors and nurses at the hospital, I would say in Louisville, it's pretty good. There's always room for growth and things like that. I think that having events or different things where, you know, community providers like doulas can meet up with OBs that are from the hospital and nurses in the hospital to just have dialogue and conversation could be really helpful because, you know, there can be some conflicts sometimes between doctors and nurses and doulas because sometimes there's just like there's a gray area that can develop with the client where, you know, they may start to lean into their doula a little bit more, and it can sometimes make the medical professionals a little uncomfortable. So with that being said, I do highly recommend that for those relationships to be stronger, doulas and the medical professionals should meet quite often.
Nina Martin, let's talk a little bit about your reporting on this. I was just reading some of your work from ProPublica, where you were previously, and of course you're at Reveal now. And there was one sub-headline that caught my eye. There is, and it's just a partial sentence from this, a profound disparity. The healthcare system focuses on babies, but often ignores their mothers. Of course, babies are critically important, but I think that's a good point that you made. A lot of times the mothers don't get as much attention, perhaps, as they should.
Yes, that was one of the major findings of the work that we did at ProPublica and Reveal, looking at maternal mortality and severe morbidity or complications in the U.S. You know, doctors and the healthcare system would often point to problems that are legitimate issues, contributors to maternal complications and deaths, such as chronic disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, asthma, the age of the mother, and the fact that older women have more complex pregnancies that make them more likely to have severe complications, the kinds of social determinants where people live, you know, where women and birthing people live, where they give the hospitals they give birth to, access to things like insurance and healthy food and clean air, et cetera, et cetera. And then I think also a really important issue, which we've touched on already and we'll touch on again and again, is racism at the interpersonal, institutional, and societal levels. But the overarching theme for every woman, a person, I would say, and every baby in this country is that the healthcare system as it's evolved, the maternal care system as it's evolved in this country over several decades, has really shifted its priority from really worrying about the mothers, the health of the mothers, to really trying to prioritize very often the health of the fetus and then the baby. And of course, we all want babies to be healthy. We want them we want women to go through to deliver healthy children, and we want those babies to grow up to be healthy. But what has often happened, and you can just see it over and over again, and what Dr. Miller was said about prenatal care is a really good example, versus postpartum care. Women get a better care during prenatal period, in part because they are carrying that baby, and we do want that baby to be born healthy. And then in the postpartum period, babies get all kinds of attention and care. And women in many parts of the country basically often have never, they're just kind of dropped off a cliff, as people would say. They don't, they may not see a doctor for the first 6 weeks, and so often then even not. So over and over again, we just, in terms of research, in terms of money spent, in terms of priorities, we have seen this development over a period of decades of the focus on the fetus and the newborn and over the health of the mom. And we're seeing it again in our culture in a really big way as we kind of look at what's happening around the country and also in Kentucky around cuts to reproductive access, so abortion and birth control, et cetera.
We're talking about healthy pregnancies and healthy childbirth, and we'll continue our conversation after a break. You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome back to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville, and today we're talking about pregnancy health and health outcomes during and after childbirth. And our guests are Dr. Edward Miller, who's an OBGYN with U of L Health. Mika Pohl is with us, a doula and a midwife student, and executive director and founder of Black Birth Justice here in Louisville. I'll give you their web address, blackbirthjustice.org. Nina Martin is with us, features editor for Reveal, the radio show and podcast, formerly with ProPublica, who's written and edited extensively on this topic. Let me come back to you, Dr. Miller, and then we'll take some calls here. But I'm curious, as we kind of drill down here in our local area, what are the big risk factors that you see in your practice at U of L Health here in our community and our region that contribute to these complications with pregnancy and childbirth?
It's all access. If you look at a city like Louisville, we have such a diverse population. And when I say diverse, I don't just mean Black, white, Asian. We have such a large refugee population. We have such a large immigrant population. And at the University of Louisville, what we see is that we see that people that don't speak English as their primary language, people that are not from this country, they come to intercare later. They come to intercare older. They come to intercare with more advanced pre-existing disease, like high blood pressure or diabetes. And not only do they do all these things, but then the healthcare system says, okay, you don't speak English, you have limited resources, but you're high risk. So we expect you to not only come to your normal prenatal visits, we expect you to come to more visits. We expect you to come on time. We expect you to show up and understand the paperwork that we give you and to interpret them as anyone else should. And the healthcare system is not flexible enough to advance and to adjust to the patients that we're seeing sometimes. So what happens? I mean, if you showed up with your child and you were late and the healthcare system shamed you, you would end up probably not coming to visits, right? And it's this reinforcing system where not only is there problems with access, but then oftentimes there's problems with the healthcare system recognizing their own downfalls. And we are sometimes reinforcing the very problems and leading to the outcomes that we're seeing, particularly in our high-risk patients.
Right. I'd like to jump in. One of the things that I've seen and heard in my reporting is that doctors, and not just doctors, nurses and medical professionals, really not understanding the difficulties that particularly low-income women, women of color, women who are immigrants, et cetera, have in accessing prenatal care. And so they blame the women. They stop listening. They don't take those women as seriously in terms of listening to them and believing them when they have a problem, but they also, or they blame women for not being able to, take the bus, across three different stops with all their kids because they can't get childcare, or they have to miss appointments because they can't get out of work. And that creates not just problems during pregnancy, but it really creates problems in the postpartum period, because if you're not treated well by the healthcare system while you're pregnant, when everyone is really trying to pay attention to you, needs to pay attention to you, what are the chances that you're going to come, that you're going to trust it, you're going to want to go back to get your postpartum care if you have access to it? So it's really a self-reinforcing problem that exists over and over.
And Nina, I know you've covered the insurance angle of this too. The healthcare system can be intimidating just on its own, but dealing with insurance and insurance company and insurance forms and that whole language of insurance. And now as Obamacare has been implemented or not implemented, and it's been a mishmash in various states. Mm-hmm. I mean, that just compounds the confusion, doesn't it?
It does in lots of states, and particularly in states that didn't take the Medicaid expansion, because what often happens is that women who in many of those states, particularly in sort of the Deep South, the limits on regular and being able to access regular Medicaid are really severe, the income limits. And so what you end up having is women who are only able to obtain really good health care compared to what they've been receiving, perhaps during pregnancy when the pregnancy Medicaid kicks in. But in a lot of places, in a lot of those states, women are kicked off of their pregnancy Medicaid after 60 days. If it's a Medicaid expansion state, maybe they'll continue to have Medicaid in others. But yes, so that's really the problem, is just this like lack of care. And then you develop, as Dr. Miller said, all these sort of, you don't have any treatment in between pregnancy for these for the kinds of complexities that and chronic conditions that make pregnancy more dangerous. I know Mika wants to jump in here.
Mika, and I'll come to you, Dr. Miller.
Sure.
Go ahead, Mika.
I wanted to add to what they're speaking on in terms of a community worker, but also in terms of myself. So, just a little background. I have four children, married, now have adequate health care. But with my first, I didn't. I didn't have health insurance before I got pregnant. And then when I got pregnant, I was able to get the prenatal Medicaid. And I will say that, and I get really emotional every time I think about it, but with my baby, I had some complications, and I was able to be seen at like 2 or 3 days postpartum. But when it came time for my 6-week checkup, due to like a mishap with scheduling, the schedulers made my appointment for about seven and a half weeks. So the day that I got there for my appointment that I really, really needed, right, mind you, because I had some complications, I was turned away. Mm. I was told that I could not be seen. And it was really, really sad, because I really needed to be seen. And I remember getting in the elevator and crying. And I got a phone call from an unknown number, so I decided to answer it. And it was my OB, and she was just so sad. And she said, "Mika, come back." She said, "I'm going to give you your appointment. I know you need your appointment and you need to come back." But I was so embarrassed and ashamed that I didn't go back.
Wow.
Dr. Miller, you wanted to make a point?
I mean, when we talk about insurance, it's one of the most important foundations to understand. We don't teach it in school. I'm in medical school. I've done 15 years of training. In medical school, you get no training on what insurance means, what different plans means. Speaking as a provider at a public academic institution, I have no idea what insurance my patients have. It literally doesn't matter. But I can tell you where insurance fails patients. I have pregnant women who come into the hospital who have pre-existing diabetes, who want to do what's right for them, who need insulin, and they can't afford it. And they go home without medication. They go home without insulin. And we know diabetes is one of the most dangerous things for pregnant women, one of the most dangerous conditions. And the system says, okay, you can't afford it. You just can't have it. We have pregnant women that come in and they know, I don't have insurance. I'm going to apply for emergency Medicaid. I'm going to get coverage for 60 days. I have to choose when to start. So do I choose it around delivery time so my delivery is paid for? Or do I choose it early on so that I can manage my high blood pressure and my diabetes and make sure that my baby's safe? They have to make these decisions. And I do maternal fetal medicine. I specialize in the care of mom and baby. But what we see over and over again is, unfortunately, sometimes the system separates them. There's maternal and there's fetal. And I think if you look at history, we place a greater emphasis on the fetal than the mom.
We're talking about pregnancy and childbirth with our three guests here on In Conversation. You just heard the voice of Dr. Edward Miller, who's an OBGYN at University of Louisville Health. Mika Poe is also with us. Mika is a doula and midwife student and founder of Black Birth Justice based here in Louisville. Nina Martin is a features editor for Reveal, previously with ProPublica. Jennifer has been waiting on the line from Louisville. Let's reach out to her. Jennifer, welcome to In Conversation.
Thank you. So first off, I'm glad that you're covering this topic. I am a teacher at a local school through JCPS that is for teen parents and for pregnant teens. And what I see, we offer wonderful services. We offer health care, very, very supportive environment for the moms. But I see a lack of resources in the community outside of our school setting. And specifically, I want to kind of advocate for more in the way of postpartum depression care. You know, these moms, I was a mom who became a mom at 26. I had a postpartum depression, didn't know what to do at all. And I see my students falling into postpartum depression. They're, you know, acclimating to momhood, and they're also, you know, having to face the stigma of sometimes color and being a teenage mother. So I would love to see some kind of mental health care for our at-risk mothers.
Jennifer, thanks so much for your call, and thank you for your work. Let me turn to you, Mika. Talk a little bit about how, because I know that's a big part of Black Birth Justice. Tell us about what you do, especially as related to teens.
Absolutely. So thank you to that caller. You know, at Black Birth Justice, our biggest goal is to provide that care for moms. We do have a special place in our heart for the teen mothers. And so, you know, for teen moms, they do need a different type of care. They need a different type of empathy and gentleness. They usually have a lot of feelings of inadequacy and just not feeling like they're, you know, mature enough. So, you know, we do a lot of encouraging and uplifting and making sure that they have their affirmations and that they know what a birth plan is and that although they're young, they can still have a birth that is empowering, right? And they can still feel empowered as a mother. I will say, me personally, and I know I'm being really personal on this show today, but I was born by a 12-year-old. My mother actually was very, very young when she conceived me. And she actually went to TAP. I don't know if that's the school that our caller was speaking of, but she went to the School of TAP here in Louisville, Kentucky. With me, you know, she had a very healthy pregnancy, and she was able to finish school and graduate. But she also had a very gentle birth at the University of Louisville. And she talks about how her birth was very transformative. And she remembers the distinct moment that she went from herself and transformed into a mother. She had a beautiful birth at U of L. Everyone was so kind and gentle with her. They treated her like a mother. They didn't treat her like a little girl. She remembers they dimmed the lights for her. They played James Brown. It just seemed like every time she talks about it, she says how beautiful and transformative it was. And that's what we should be doing. As doulas, as medical professionals, we should be making sure that we are empowering teen mothers.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And we appreciate you sharing that with us. Dr. Miller, we could do a whole show on postpartum depression, but for those who maybe not know a lot about it, what is it and how common is it and what causes it?
Postpartum depression is so common. And most importantly, it's so underreported. So we have incidences of greater than, you know, up to 50% of women will deal with some sort of postpartum mood adjustment, whether we call it, you know, the postpartum blues or postpartum depression, or in the most severe form, postpartum psychosis. But it is remarkably common and it's remarkably underreported. We have this idea of, you're a mom, you should be happy, you're the babies at home, get it together. But postpartum depression is characterized by a lot of symptoms of feelings of not being enough, not being worthy, not sleeping, feeling guilty, feeling like you're a terrible mom, crying uncontrollably, not sleeping, mood adjustments. So there's a lot of different symptoms that really run the gamut. And I approach it from a symptom, from a stance of, this is probably going to happen. You will probably have moments where you feel this way. And the whole goal, as Mika talked to, is, as mentioned, is you have to build a support system and develop a team around you and a village around you that's going to help support you, not just the medical system. And that's where I think we need to do better as a healthcare system, is making sure the women are discharged home with those resources.
You're listening to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. We're talking about pregnancy health and healthy births with Dr. Edward Miller. You just heard, is an OBGYN at U of L Health. Mika Pohl is with us, who is a doula and midwife student, executive director and founder of Black Birth Justice, based here in Louisville. Nina Martin is with us, features editor for Reveal, previously with ProPublica, who's written and worked extensively on these topics. And Nina, just to switch over to another issue you want to talk about, substance use issues as related to pregnancy.
Sorry about that. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, this is really related to what we've just been talking about around maternal health. There's a growing awareness around the country that many maternal deaths are actually related to, if not directly caused by, substance use disorder issues. And that those are directly, and then, you know, and that's a real problem in Kentucky as well. I think the most recent report that I saw from the State Maternal Mortality Review Committee said that at least 50% of maternal deaths in Kentucky were related to substance use issues. And that doesn't mean that people are dying from overdoses because they're bad mothers and they don't care about their children at all. Very often, especially for lower income women or women who don't have good access to care, substances are a form of self-medicating. Other issues around mental health, including depression and including, and of course, lack of access to good treatment options when you're pregnant and in the postpartum period, also sort of are contributors. And so I think that it's really a growing problem, has been a growing problem around the country. It's definitely a problem according to data in Kentucky. And I think it's important also to sort of realize that very often substance use deaths among moms and pregnant women are often sort of lumped into a different category as being, well, that's like you know, an accident or that's not related, but it's very, very much related to the kinds of mental health issues that are really common during the postpartum period in particular.
We are coming up against another break. And when we come back from our break, I want to play a feature story that our health reporter, April Rickert, produced for us this week. She wanted to be with us today, but couldn't be with us. Had a conflict today. But she's been exploring what effect the Supreme Court striking down Roe v. Wade is going to have on all of this, on pregnancies and the pregnancies that are that may have to be carried to term. We'll talk about that and much more with our three guests, Nina Martin from Reveal, Mika Poe, who's a doula and midwife student, founder of Black Birth Justice, and Dr. Edward Miller, OBGYN at U of L Health. We'll be back with much more after a break. This is In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome back to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. We're talking about pregnancy health and health outcomes during and after childbirth today with three guests, Dr. Edward Miller, who's an OBGYN at U of L Health, Mika Pohl, doula and midwife student, and founder and executive director of Black Birth Justice based here in Louisville. You can find out more about the organization at blackbirthjustice.org. Nina Martin is with us, been writing and editing on this topic for most recently Reveal, which is part of the Center for Investigative Reporting and previously with ProPublica. And before I let the clock get away from us here, let's listen to April Rickert's piece here that she did for us this week. Following the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, hundreds of thousands are poised to lose access to abortions in Kentucky, where it's statistically more dangerous to be pregnant than in many other states, as we've been talking about. April Rickert, our health reporter at WFPL, reports on the state of pre- and postnatal care in Kentucky as a fight over a total abortion ban continues in court.
If you're pregnant in Kentucky or the surrounding region, numbers show you have a harder time reaching a doctor than in other parts of the country. Dr. Anna Banfield was working in rural West Virginia up until a few months ago. She saw firsthand how hard it was for people to get the health care they needed.
So we have a lot of mothers in our country who are suffering because potentially, in many cases, there are breakdowns in the prenatal care system.
Data from the U.S. Health Resources and Services Administration show more than half of Kentucky's 120 counties had no dedicated OBGYN in 2020 and 2021. It's hard to find prenatal care in much of Kentucky, and pending abortion bans likely mean more pregnancies to come. It's part of a nationwide issue. The states with the harshest abortion restrictions are often the states with the highest maternal mortality. The CDC reports that between 2018 and 2020, Kentucky's maternal mortality rate was higher than the nationwide average at nearly 40 deaths per 100,000 live births. That's double the nationwide rate. A report by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services found Kentucky did not have the number of OBGYNs that it needed as of a few years ago. The situation is expected to get worse in the next decade. Family doctors often provide prenatal care in rural areas. Information from the American Board of Family Medicine found only about 8% in Kentucky do. That's lower than surrounding states. Banfield says prenatal care is crucial to ensuring the health and safety of both babies and parents, and it can be more difficult to access in rural areas.
We may have a patient who has hypertension and goes from having hypertension to having preeclampsia or eclampsia and now maternal seizures and maternal neurologic complications associated with that. You know, we may have a mother who has a placenta that's inappropriately located and has bleeding outside the hospital that results in hemorrhage that is life-threatening.
She says even people with low-risk pregnancies should have regular visits. And pregnant people in rural areas need even more care as they have higher rates of things like diabetes and hypertension.
There's additional surveillance that is recommended. And oftentimes that means that the number of visits that they are recommended to have can be substantially increased.
But the lack of maternal care providers means that people have to travel long distances to get health care. Melissa Egan says there are other factors at play as well, like a lack of insurance or racist practitioners. She's a senior policy analyst at the Commonwealth Institute of Kentucky. Egan says often doctors blame individuals for not accessing prenatal care when the issue is much more systemic.
A woman may have seen her provider, and that provider may have expressed something that she perceived as being racist. And she may not want to come to that provider any longer. She may not trust that provider. She may stop using prenatal care altogether or may want to find another provider.
Banfield says while the causes are many, the result of low prenatal health care is the same. Dangerous outcomes for patients and babies. And that, she says, is likely to get worse.
The post-Roe situation and the issues we have with maternal mortality and the issues that we have with access to care in rural areas of the United States and even some urban areas that are under-resourced are all coming together in a way that is going to make our situation when we are trying to fight a battle against maternal mortality 1,000 times worse.
Abortions are still available in Kentucky for now, but those are also hard to access. The state's only two providers are in Louisville, far from much of the state's rural population. I'm April Rickard in Louisville.
Thanks to our health reporter, April Rickard, for sharing that with us. We are talking about pregnancy and childbirth and healthy outcomes here on In Conversation on WFPL with our three guests, Dr. Edward Miller from U of L Health, Mika Pose, a doula and midwife student, and Nina Martin from Reveal. Well, Dr. Miller, this is, I know we're early in this court battle here in this process, but post-Roe, you heard some speculation on where the numbers might go after this. I mean, what do you see happening from your vantage point at, as an OBGYN?
I think for patients, for providers, the best word to characterize this moment right now is uncertainty. We don't know what's coming tomorrow. We don't know what's going to happen in a few months. What we do know from data, from history, from our present, is that this is going to impact women who already face substantial barriers in access to care and quality care. We are going to see women come in sicker. We are going to see women come in with septic miscarriages. We are going to see women who take drastic measures to protect themselves and their futures and their lives. We are going to see them coming into the emergency departments, not just at U of L, but in local communities. We are going to see them research unsafe ways on the internet to take control of their health. It's not what may happen, it's going to be what happens. This is just the current reality that we're living in.
I'd like to jump in. One of the other things that we'll see, I think, is that women will go to, if they have the ability to do it, if they have the finances, if they have the other resources, they'll go to other places to obtain the care that they need because they may have reason not to trust their own providers in their own state. And that creates other problems, of course, because then you're talking, you're maybe you're a high risk person, you don't sort of going to see a provider who doesn't know anything about you. And that's a whole other really big problem in the system. I think that the other thing to kind of keep in mind, we haven't talked about this, but you know, there's this sort of the rates of maternal mortality and severe maternal complications have been really high in the US. They've been much higher in the US than other developed countries. But there was a point a few years ago that it seemed like, you know, it was still way too high, but it was kind of plateauing. But the most recent data show that that is actually, that the reverse is happening now, that maternal deaths in the US, according to the CDC, have been surging again during the pandemic era in particular. And it's really astonishing, some of the new data that came out earlier this year. The overall maternal mortality rate among all women in the U.S. jumped 36% from 2018 to 2020. Black women, 48%. Hispanic women also really high. And so I think that to kind of, you know, disrupt the disruption that we're about to see on top of comes on top of a system that was already in new disruption because of COVID, because of the pandemic, because of all of that. And so we, Dr. Miller's right, the uncertainty is really huge, but we have to understand that just as maternal health is a series of things that are built upon each other, so is our maternal health system. And when it's not, there's a lot of different bad things going on all the same time that we may not be paying attention to as closely as we need to.
Nina, who should
and
we?
A number we don't talk about is these rates are rising, but 80% of maternal deaths are preventable. That should be the number that infuriates us. It's not just the rates, it's that these 8 out of 10 cases could have been prevented with basic rights, basic humanity, basic access to care. And that is what's infuriating. What we've learned from COVID in the takeaway point, when we talk about systems in place, is that when something is big enough that it affects everyone, like COVID did, we will put every resource into it. We will put a mask on everyone. We will shut down schools. We will shut down businesses. This is a public health emergency, but nothing's going to get shut down. Resources aren't going to be reallocated. We are not handling it like a public health emergency, and quite simply, because it doesn't affect everyone.
Right.
We talk about, Nina, I'll start with you and others, you can interject as well. We talk about developed countries, our numbers are worse. Who's setting the model? Who should we look to? What other countries should we look to that are doing things that we should really look at emulating?
It's really hard because the U.S. is such a different system than most other countries, and we're so fragmented. The way our healthcare system, for example, is so fragmented is something that other affluent countries really can't even wrap their heads around. I think that what I would say is that there's two places that I would point to. I think the U.K., which has a history of colonialism and immigration and actually really disproportionate rates of maternal deaths and severe morbidity among women of color, Black women as well, they kind of have really kind of put maternal health at the center of how they do things. They provide not necessarily doulas, for example, but they provide their system of prenatal and particularly postpartum care is really, really significant. And also California has done, where I live, has done a much better job of taking this seriously and paying attention to what some of the causes are around hemorrhage and hypertension in particular, trying to bring down the numbers and really put systems in place that are more protective for women. But I think that, the UK about and the way they deal with maternal, with gathering of maternal data and also postpartum care is really is a model for us.
And most of these countries, a lot of them offer much better family leave opportunities than we do in most states, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
We are talking about healthy pregnancies, healthy childbirths on In Conversation on WFPL. Our guests are Nina Martin from Reveal, Mika Poe, who is a doula and midwife student, and Dr. Edward Miller, OBGYN at U of L Health. Mika, let me come back to you. I want to talk a little bit more about the work of the doula. Let's talk about a birth plan and why that is important. Talk about how that works.
So with the birth plan, this is an outline of what your ideal birthing circumstance would look like, right? So we always tell birthing individuals that, you know, always leave room for something to go not as planned, but you have the right and the power to be able to create and cultivate and also manifest the beautiful birth that you desire, right? Doesn't matter if you are a first-time mom, a second time mom, it doesn't matter. Anybody has the right to create a birth plan. And what this birth plan typically looks like, you can find a template online. Typically it's one sheet of paper. It's preferred to be typed instead of handwritten so that it's easily viewed and read. I always recommend to have multiple copies. Bring a folder, put up two or three copies in your folder. You don't know how long you'll be in labor. You may have a nurse shift change. And there could be a time where your birth plan could get lost in translation. I know they are trying to be really good about keeping up with it, making copies themselves, but just, you know, be proactive and have a few copies with you.
Dr. Miller, I want to turn to you because I know you work with LGBTQ patients. A lot more people these days are transitioning. We're seeing a lot more people, transgender, or that we're seeing transgender men that are giving birth. Are you seeing more of these patients, or is that something that's becoming more common as people feel more free to talk about it and do other things related to that?
Absolutely. It is a different culture world that we're navigating right now. We have many transgendered men that are giving birth at U of L, that are seeking care at U of L, and getting to listen to their struggles in trying to obtain compassionate, sensitive, well-informed care has been humbling. We've had to do a lot of self-reflection as an organization about our systems, our ways, how we see, treat, manage, speak to patients. And it has really helped us grow, but absolutely, we are seeing a significant increase.
Let me pose that question to you, Nina, as well. I mean, we've seen, a lot of reporting on that recently. Is that something you've been looking at as a trend?
I haven't been looking at it personally, but I have been hearing about it and seeing it as well. And I think that, it poses, again, a whole series of new complexities for people who are transitioning, I would guess. Dr. Miller, maybe you have more experience. You obviously have more experience with the actual treatment, but my guess is that in many of those cases, the complexities of being pregnant would be greater. There might be more risks associated with it. And I would certainly think, again, that when you're thinking about it, the struggles for it, that the postpartum period can be even lonelier and harder for a lot of people, especially if they didn't get, you know, really sensitive, great care during the pregnancy itself. So my sense is just overall in reporting is that there's like a series of core issues that we've touched on a lot that are problematic for everyone, for all people who give birth, but that if you're in a more specialized category or and I don't put race in a specialized category, if you're like in a if you are a person of color and or if you're a trans person or if you're LGBTQ but not, you know, but cis, you know, you're not trans, there's still going to be issues that are going to be that are specific to that status that are going to make your pregnancy and postpartum recovery perhaps even more challenging.
Well, we've been talking about, racial disparities among certain groups. Dr. Miller, are you seeing any concerted effort in our community and in our region to work on this, to make the situation better, to fix these disparities?
100%. There are efforts and there's so much fantastic work that's being done to combat these disparities, but on the flip side, it's not enough because it's not going to solve all of the issues. But the very first step is getting the broadest, most diverse group of people at the table to combat these inequities. I think at U of L Health, we've recognized that as a healthcare system, the way we are going to battle this is not just as a major healthcare organization, but it's with partnering with the community. It's partnering with MECA and doulas that are in the community doing the work that can expand the reach of what we can offer as a healthcare system. So there are grants, there is money, there is social work resources, there's mental health services that we're providing to patients, both peripartum and postpartum. And they're band-aids on problems, but really the big thing is we need to start the very hard part of systemic organizational change and structural change that's going to lead to better outcomes.
We are out of time. I want to thank you all so much for this great conversation. Very helpful, very enlightening, and sharing your experiences with us. Dr. Edward Miller, Mika Pohl, and Nina Martin, thank you all so much for joining us today. You can hear this and other In Conversation shows by visiting WFPL.org or wherever you get your podcast. Thanks to our In Conversation production team today. Michelle Tyreen Johnson, Laura Ellis, Brad Yost, and Russell Wells. Bill Burton anchors our local news. Kojin Toshiro composed our opening and closing theme. And I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.